Blog Talk Radio.
This is Jos Ogonige, Will Bluewater, a 7th grade grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. As Bluewater, 7th great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of the old, so that I may remember who I am.
Well, hello everybody. This is Bluewater coming to you tonight on Oklava Radio. Sunday nights is Oklava Radio. And tonight, we're going to turn Mark the Badger Borcherding loose. This fellow, I think he's a seer in his own right. I don't know whether he has visions or not. I suspect he does. But he sees things that other people don't. And I think that's pretty much the definition of what a seer is. I know. It took me quite a while to understand what the heck he was saying. It's just, for a while, it just was just over my head. Here, this guy was sending me messages. I was going, "Who is this nut?" You know, I just didn't understand. And finally, we're all, I suppose, some of us are all arrogant in our own right, but this guy really understands, and I think he's got some special insight into. Not just the Mayan calendar, but a lot of things. So how are you doing tonight, Mark?
Oh, doing all right.
Oh, that's good. And well, I know you'd message me. And oh, by the way, folks, if you have a question and would like to call in any time to 347-996-3318. It's right on the page right in front of you, or you can Skype in. By getting your Skype up and running and pushing the little blue S symbol next to the phone number. But Mark's been noticing some things going on geophysically, things to do with the earth and the sky lately. And I think it was just high time that we turned him loose and let him bring us up to date with his observations that have to do with... signs in the sun and the moon and the stars and in the earth. So what do you think?
Yeah, and if, there might be some people when we're discussing things, maybe they had their own visions or their own knowledge or wisdom or something they learned. And so, they should maybe call in and also share, their understanding and experiences and knowledge too, because we can put everything together. So
absolutely.
Maybe... And other people may be noticing things too, so, mm-hmm. wherever they live.
This is a team effort. What we're doing, you know, more two heads are better than one, and 100's better than two. Hey, Mark, have you ever seen the movie? I may seem to be getting tangential, but have you ever seen the movie Moneyball?
No, I haven't.
This movie was made a few years back, and I had never seen it till this morning, and I watched it three times.
Oh,
and
yeah?
It was about it was about a guy that was drafted as a young player back in the mid '80s. And, I mean, the scouts told his family, I mean, this, they say, hey, we're lucky to find a guy that's got one or two gifts. He's got five. And we're sure he's going to be a success. And he was an absolute flop as a baseball player. And he ended up in, I mean, he had a full ride to Stanford University. And so he rode out, was a bunch of years frustrating as just, you know, and the point was, that a person can't be successful until he's encouraged. But this guy was a real visionary. He knew there had to be a better way because he was with the Oakland Athletics, and they were the poorest team in the baseball league. And I guess back in 2001 or 2, they came real close to winning the pennant on a fraction against the Yankees on a fraction of the salary budget that the Yankees had. The Yankees, beat them out. But after that, they were gutted of their best players in trade. So, bear in mind, I don't know anything about baseball. I played Little League 1 year and was a right fielder. And I mean, I was a total flop, and I'm not a fan of the game, but. But this guy went to he was looking for some players to replace the ones that had been taken from him in the draft, and he met a guy in Cleveland that had graduated from Yale as an economist, and he noticed that in this meeting where he was negotiating for players, that this young 25-year-old guy was giving signals to these older guys in their 40s and 50s and 60s about who to trade, who not to trade. So afterwards, he went to talk with this guy and found out. He said, "Well, who are you? You know, what are you telling these guys?" And he found out that this guy knew all about computer sampling and statistical analysis, and so he ended up hiring him. And what they decided to do is they looked at the formula that they had from that they almost won the pennant, you know, that year, and they decided, well, we're gonna have to draft three guys from the minor leagues to replace this one guy, and they literally decided, well, what skills do you need, you know, for first base? What do you need in a pitcher? What do you need in a catcher? And they got, you know, a bunch of they put together a bargain basement team. Not that every player, you know, was good for doing everything. It's just that every player was good. I mean, some were good for just on getting on bases, and some were good at pitching. Their pitcher was just absolutely weird in the way he pitched. A lot of them had injuries, and they had a 20. They ended up losing the first 14 games out of 17, and then after that, they finally psychologically got it together. They had a 20-game winning streak, never done before. And then they lost the pennant again. So he got called. The owner of the Oakland Athletics wasn't sure, you know, what he wanted to do, but he ended up. This guy ended up getting hired by the Boston Red Sox because he really felt that they could do this and they could change the way things were done in the game. And his interview with the owner
might be a lesson for all of us in that.
Well, exactly, and the guy. Everybody needs to watch this movie, but particularly watch the interview at the end, because they said that whenever anybody tries to shake anything up, the people that are in control absolutely scream and yell and holler, of course, this kind of thing goes on in Washington, D.C. every few years. But I got to thinking, oh, my gosh, you know, economists have probably known now for a whole lot of years exactly what barrels we were staring down as far as population growth and, you know, the ability to the earth to what we can sustain as far as population. And they probably figure that things are going to happen, and you can imagine what plans they've got. But you know, but then I got to thinking, well, they've got their computers, but we've got Creator. Creator gave us the machinery and the time clock, and to understand what's going on. And I'll just shut up there and let you talk.
Well, the interesting thing you're bringing up is, yeah, we have Creator, and we have a lot of things that, through different cultures and stuff, we've been told that, you know, if we really pay attention to what Creator's saying and stuff, the thing is these guys are operating on their business ideas and concepts of, which, you know, there's not enough, as everything scarce, it's going to run out, and if there's not enough, it's going to cost a lot, and they're going to make a lot of money. Versus in Creator's realm, all we have to do is look around us and see there's an infinite number of stars in creation. It doesn't end. It just outflows. Anybody that's planted a garden, you plant, you can get 5 seeds, plant. And then next year, from those things, you have maybe 100, 200 seeds. You do it again, now you're up to your armpits in seeds. So it's abundance. And the only thing we're asked is to follow his laws and also just be thankful. That's what the Hopi said when they went from the last third world to the fourth world cycle. They were told that the spirit being, I forget his name, Sukkonang or something, appeared and told them, you're now in the next world. The only thing you have to do is follow the laws of the Creator and sing praises to Creator every day. That's all. If we don't hear you singing those praises to Creator, we will know you have returned to evil, and we're going to come back and do this again, namely recreate the face of the earth.
Yeah.
That's basically what's going on. Now, there's various things that are happening right now that are potential events and maybe very important signs that we're moving along in the process here. And, you know, we probably really need to stop and pay some attention, because I don't know if these things are going to escalate and move further or not. I suspect they will. But there were 3 main topics and things that have happened, actually several, even more than that, but 3 biggies that came up here recently in the last week or so. One of them was the Europeans. ESA launched a swarm satellite a while back, and it measures magnetics. And one of the things, maybe the only thing, but one of the things it does is measure the magnetic fields of Earth. And if you looked at the picture that it came up with, you'll see a rainbow of colors, but up at the North Pole you'll see, or north part of the Earth, you'll see 2 red ovals of magnetics. You would tend to think there'd be 1 of them, not 2. That seems to be a potential indicator to me that it's possible the Earth has already moved out of a dipole, 2-pole configuration into 4 poles, possibly. 2 at the South Pole, 2 at the North Pole. And it could further split into more, and if it keeps doing that, there'd be just a bunch of them, who knows how many, and then it just goes erratic, and the magnetic field's all over the place, and it collapses to 0 at some point. But right now, what surprised me about this picture is it looks to me like there's already 2 magnetic North Poles, or at least 2 strong areas, and one where it was, and one, you know, over kind of in the Russia-Siberia part, maybe. So that was one story. Another story we had was out of South America, and they were saying they were taking measurements of ultraviolet radiation. And there's 3 types, UVA, UVB, and UVC. And I believe it's the sea is the one you really have to watch, because usually, normally, not much of it gets to the ground. That's the one that the ozone and other stuff has a tendency to block out. And it is, normally, they said, you know, when it gets up to about one of their measurements of 11, that's considered kind of, you know, not so good. They were reporting, I think, measurements, I don't know, around 43 or 48. This is actually a couple of years ago, but they've been seeing increased ultraviolet radiation. I've heard stories of this also coming from groups in California and also Canada. And they not only talked about the UV that they were taking measurements, they also had photographs, and you can probably look it up on the internet and find it, pictures of trees. And what was interesting to me was the pictures of the trees were dying. And they were dying from the top down.
Oh.
Many, I don't know how many tribes have, Native American tribes have prophecies about the time when the trees start dying from the top down.
Mad Bear, yeah. But wasn't Mad Bear said that too? Or he was reiterating something.
Yeah, so we have photographs, people taking pictures of this right now. And it's the UV. And one of the reasons UV or any type of radiation can get into the Earth more easily is if the magnetic fields are weaker. But it's not only the Earth, it's also the sun's magnetic field since, I forget what year, it's been a few years now, it started dropping too. And the magnetic field of the sun goes out, I don't know, probably maybe even past Pluto. I'm not sure how far it goes out. But it also protects us.
2004 was the first year that NOAA started including solar, you know, in their weather forecast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was around that time, or maybe, I mean, it may have been earlier. I forget. I have a chart somewhere. But yeah, so we have a situation where both the sun and the Earth are dropping our shields, our magnetic field shields, and that means a lot more radiation can get in, UV, cosmic radiation, and all of that. And that's, you know, that becomes a problem. So if we see more trees dying, certain plants are more sensitive and, you know, might just burn up more, get burned by the extra UV. And, of course, that's going to affect people, too. So, and then a third story that popped up here recently last week was they were saying, you know, the polar vortex that they name they came up with last winter.
Yep.
They said hit us and that. Well, they're saying that this next week there's going to be a polar vortex in June, and in about the same area that the winter one hit, and they say that the temperatures in that part of the United States and Canada are going to drop about 20 or 30 degrees below normal. Now, that's interesting because it's one of the things that the Hopi elders talked about. They talked about a time when the seasons would change a little bit, both the springs would end and then the winters would start early or something like that. And they talked about how people would be trying to plant with finger sacks, gloves, brushing away the snow. They're trying to plant in snow. You know, that isn't going to work. So what they're really saying there is, you know, it gives you an idea of aspect of desperation of those people trying to plant. And here now we have the story of this polar vortex. And we have the UV radiation, and we have the thing with the swarm satellite with the picture of the poles. So that brings about a condition where all these relate back to the magnetic fields of the Earth. And those relate to, in the Hopi stories, the twins. And those also show up in Zuni. Several other tribes have the twins at the poles. Their way of describing the magnetic fields. And so we're we're seeing things right now, that's an indicator, that's, you know, pretty much a big warning sign that things are moving along in terms of our magnetic fields. And if we go into a full reversal, the scientific point of view of this, the Hopi point of view of it is the Creator tells the twins at the poles to let go for a little bit. And then the Earth spins around, goes off balance, rolls over, mountains go into the sea, seas come up over the land, and then they say the world, in the second world, when it went from the second world to the third world, the world spun through cold and lifeless space and froze into a solid ball of ice. That's basically in the Hopi story how the second world ended. In the scientific point of view, we have a magnetic reversal, and all kinds of things can happen during a full magnetic reversal of the Earth. You have the radiation coming in more and more and more. You have all kinds of stuff coming at you from the sky, not just radiation. Like one of the things that the Mayan elders talked about, they talked about oil raining from the sky. Well, this has a connection to the magnetic fields. When I first heard that story, I thought, well, right, oil raining from the sky? You got to be kidding me. But we have a moon in our solar system right now where that's happening right now. Oil raining from the sky from Titan, the moon of Saturn. And one of the things about Titan is there's a lot of hydrocarbons moving up into the atmosphere of Titan, or what little atmosphere it has. And but Titan has no magnetic field. So we already have an example of a moon in our solar system that doesn't have a magnetic field, or at least no magnetic field energy moving, and it has hydrocarbons, methane, and stuff going up, and it rains oil. Well, if you look in the last, I don't know, 5-7 years, we've had stories about large methane gas releases out of our oceans, off the coast of California, up around the Arctic Circle, Norway, Sweden, and that's where I first heard it. And also the thing that happened in the Gulf of Mexico, a lot of methane hydrates coming up out of the ocean with that whole thing with BP and all that.
Yeah.
So there's the there's the methane. And there apparently has been a fairly large amount of methane being going up in our atmosphere. So if our magnetic fields continue to become unstable and they collapse and they go to close to zero, we could be seeing the same thing that the Mayans reported seeing a long time ago. We could see oil raining from the sky.
Wonderful.
We could see not only oil coming out of the sky, we could see micro diamonds raining out of the sky.
Oh.
Reversals on the sun can cause nuclear explosions, magnetic reversals.
Well, that's what kind of what Ed Dames has been talking about with the kill shot.
So one of the guys, Robert Felix, wrote a book on magnetic reversals. It's a pretty good book. It's a quick read and simple information. And he asked a question in that book. He said, well, you know, if magnetic reversals on the sun could cause a nuclear explosion, well, couldn't magnetic reversals on the Earth cause a natural nuclear explosion too? Well, guess what? All over Earth, we have evidence of exactly that. We have different, I forget they have a name for it, some kind of glass that's melted. It's in over by Africa in the desert there. I think it's in the United States in Death Valley. Several places over the world, they have this sprinkling of this, I think it's like big glass nodules or something. And they say that's looks like something from like a nuclear explosion or something.
Mm-hmm.
And there's other measurements. And so there's evidence to show that that may have very well happened in the past. And the other thing that could come out is we could have, micro particles of like iron or something. Meteorites. I mean,
are you talking about Trona?
No, I don't think so.
You know what trona is? Trona is a mineral that they mine it in Wyoming, and that's what they used to make like Coke bottles out of. It's a non-marine evaporite mineral mined as the primary source of sodium carbonate.
Might be, I don't know.
Yeah, it's like a glass.
I forget there's a name for it. I can't remember the name for it. There's a name for the particles. They're glass things. There's a name for it, and it's not that one, although that could be related to it. I'm trying to look and see if I can find it. Here we go. One name for it's tektites.
Oh, yeah, tektites, sure.
Spherules or spherical tiny black droplets of glass or teardrops.
Yeah, our listeners can Google desert glass formed by ancient atomic bombs.
Yeah, right.
Or ancient atomic warfare. Or just, all right.
But the key thing is, these could be natural, caused by our magnetic reversal.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we can have micro dust meteorites. You remember Velikovsky and them wrote about the mammoths that were flash frozen with the food in their mouth?
Uh-huh.
Well, one of the other things that happened to them, and, I don't think a lot of people know this, but in their tusk, they had holes bored in it, very small.
Yeah.
And they determined that was like these little micro dust meteorites, little very small pellets or something of iron, whatever, that were red hot and just shot right through their tusk, right through the bone. And that, they determined, was raining out of the sky. That's like everything in the kitchen sink is coming at you out of the sky, radiation, micrometeorites, tektites, all kinds of hydrocarbon compounds. Some of these compounds, they said that the hydrocarbons actually save people's butt because they couldn't grow anything. It was dark, and they ate this. There was counts of different people, different cultures on Earth that said the stuff that rained out of the sky, some form of hydrocarbon, they were picking it up off the ground and eating it. It kept them alive.
Wow.
Some theorize that that was the manna from heaven in the Bible, was that type of compound, some type of hydrocarbon.
And if you read the Talmud, they assigned that the smell of it was similar to an organic substance that they were already familiar with. I can't remember what it was, though.
Mm-hmm.
But it had a distinctive smell.
Yeah, I saw these things happen with the poles and the swarm satellite and the polar vortex and weather and the UV radiation, and that's telling me that we are already maybe a little bit further along in this whole process than I thought. And, they used to say on these magnetic reversals, well, this takes a long time, hundreds or thousands of years. And then they got it down, well, it might only take a few years. And then they got it down and said, well, it might take a few months. And they got to the point where they were down to saying that it could happen in weeks or days. A lot faster than they think. Now, it doesn't mean there aren't longer-term events that could take a little bit longer. But here, I'll tell you, I'll read something out of Felix's book here. The title of the subsection here is Perhaps in Only 3 Weeks. And it says, not content with earlier findings, Coe and his colleagues took another look. The Earth's magnetic field had reversed at the astonishingly rapid rate. Their new study found 6 to 8 degrees of shift per day. Not only did the field reverse, it fluctuated. Rapid fluctuations occurred many times during the reversal, said Coe. Enhanced external magnetic field activity from the sun might somehow also cause these jumps. And they list a whole bunch of specific locations in the world here. And it says, those kinds of magnetic field fluctuations, I submit, generate massive surges of electricity in and above the Earth, causing gigantic explosions in the ground and in the atmosphere. Then radioactive materials begin raining from the sky. Now, the electricity, you know, you look at that. You remember in the Bible, and I think many Native American counts and people all over the world a long time ago reported stuff literally coming out of the ground, bugs, worms, all kinds of stuff.
Yep.
So what if the earth is electrified and that ground, they're getting shocked and they're trying to get away from the electric shock? And they're literally coming out of the ground trying to get away from it. It makes sense. So there's a whole slew of events. If you look in all these tribes and you look at the Bible, the book of Exodus, and you look at the description of things happening there, this whole thing of a magnetic field reversal could cause all of those events. It could be a triggering factor for all of them.
A few years back, I was listening to probably Coast to Coast AM, but apparently there's something in the fossil record that made at least one or a few scientists believe that at some point that there was a bottleneck in organic life forms that happened, and the only ones that survived, this may have been while the dinosaurs are dead, but the only ones that survived were life forms that were, you know, a foot or two underground that avoided the you know, incoming shotgun blast from outer space, literally.
Yeah, that's, you know, some of the native things, they have animals that burrow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, even in the Mayan, the owls are considered one of the signs of prophecy. But what most people don't know is those owls burrow in the ground, the ones they're talking about. They're burrowing owls. Go in the ground. They're not up in the trees. And they equate them to things like, you know, the other animals that burrow, that get underground, and also smaller animals, because the smaller animals can crawl into little holes and stuff in the ground. You're a big animal like a dinosaur. There ain't a cave that you're going to get into, probably. And not only that, if you survive all this stuff coming at you, afterwards, your metabolism requires quite a bit of food, and there's nothing growing. So how are you going to survive? Even if you survive the initial thing, your body metabolism requires so much food that you're not going to make it. The other one, though, that came up is animals that had calcium in the oceans, the silica-based life forms did better. And one of the reasons is the strontium-90 radiation binds to calcium. It uptakes the calcium, but it doesn't do it to silicon. So in some cases, a huge amount of the calcium-based life forms, they didn't make it, but the silica-based life forms, you know, sponges and stuff, you know, have silicon, they did fine. So different types of things, you know, in the plant life, in some situations, they got wiped pretty badly too. So, yeah, and the ones that make it, they get mutated by these, by the radiation. So that's where all these changes, where we see seemingly new life forms come out of nowhere. Yeah, they were existing life forms that went through some pretty severe radiation, and they mutated and they changed. And so, yeah, that overnight almost, they were, you know, they were different, some of them. So that makes accounts for that as well. And the you know, if you look some of the Mayan carvings, they noticed that back a long time ago we went through a mini reversal, but a magnetic field fluctuation, not a full-blown one, but just a kind of a minor one. It was, I forget what year it was about, I don't know, it was around, I guess, 500-600 AD or somewhere back in there, I think. But I believe 200 or so years before that, the Mayans saw it coming, and they carved these carvings. And these carvings had deformed people.
Mm.
They were affected by the magnetics and the radiation, probably. So they apparently knew this was coming. And so they, you know, took some action maybe to move or do something. Remember, they like to... they like to have caves go underground, The Hopi did too. Remember, in their emergent stories, where are they emerging from? Underground.
The ant people, who look like aliens, showed them exactly what was going on somehow. They knew what was going on above ground.
We're talking about
divine intervention. Question is, how do we qualify for it? So
that's a good question. Well, remember what the Hopi said, the instructions they were given. If you follow the laws of the Creator and you sing praises to the Creator every day, you'll be okay. If you don't do that, then they say, we know you return to evil, and we come back here and recreate the face of the earth again.
Uh-huh.
Purification.
Well, you know, the Hebrews were told the very same thing. Most, probably 99% of Christians don't understand that there was a covenant that preceded the covenant from Exodus. And it was only seven laws that were required. And it's called the Laws of Noah, and you can look that up. You can Google it. And those are the laws that Enoch and those guys lived. And the rumor was, at least, that they were translated or lifted up off the planet and divinely. Well, and, you know, the story goes, if everybody simply lived the seven laws, we'd have eternal peace forever. And they're pretty simple.
No big deal. That's exactly the words that the Hopi said. Is they mentioned, they don't say eternal, they say everlasting life and peace.
And it's called the Rainbow Covenant. The Rainbow Covenant. The Rainbow Warriors, you know, are we the Rainbow Warriors? Is it just as simple as that? Is there so much of a cultural divide, you know, that Native people can understand that the true white brother maybe did bring something useful, like, you know, exactly what these seven laws were? Because it's identical to pretty much, you know.
Well, everybody knows it. Kind of built into us, so just we don't think about it and do it.
Well, and the wild thing is, you know, when you start looking into it, you know, go on to YouTube, you can see that that Arabs, you know, all over the Middle East recognize those laws because they were also given them, and they're signing on to them, and so that there's a vast missionary effort going forth in the Middle East having to do with these seven laws. But over here, because of dogmas and everything that else going on, there's, you know, some resistance to it. You know, particularly in the Roman Catholic front, because they say, oh well, you know, the Jews are saying, you know, these seven laws and everybody's gonna have to live them, and if you don't, they'll kill you. Well, no, that's not true. And what they're saying is, when Creator returns to Earth, you know, and when there's a temple standing, then, you know.
Well,
that
see, the problem is the
there'll be a
lot,
capital.
Most of the Roman Catholics have lost. They're like the Hopi. You know, all the traditional Hopi elders were, you know, hunted down by the Hopi police force and given hassle and caused trouble.
Yeah.
And all they're trying to do is maintain their culture. Well, you know what you find? You find the same thing in the Catholics, because guess what? There's traditional Catholics. You go talk to them, and I talked to some of them. I made stuff on Guadalupe, and I showed some of the native perspective on Our Lady of Guadalupe, made a video on it, and it shows a lot of stuff like white buffalo cattlemen, all these others. You know what? What I found is the real traditional Catholics, who I thought would like call me a pagan or something, right? They didn't have a problem with it at all. And they understood it. They had their wits about them and could discern truth.
Right. Well,
the,
you know,
the other ones, the other ones, mainstream ones in the modern Catholic Church that weren't traditional, they couldn't understand it. They didn't know what it was. And I thought the opposite would be true. I thought they'd eat it up, and I thought the traditional guys would all call me a pagan. It was the opposite.
Yeah, it's the opposite. Yeah, it's the I think the divine was Vatican II. But our guest our guest next Saturday night, get this. I get this email a couple nights ago. Bible prophecy predicts World War III. And it's sent from a guy, and I recognize that his name was Vietnamese. And it turns out this fellow, who we're going to interview next Saturday night, his last name is Trong. And
yeah, I've seen
that. He was a senator. He was in the government of Vietnam, and he was one of the people that was evacuated in 1975 when Saigon fell. And I spoke with him briefly over the phone. He was kind of surprised that I figured out his phone number, because he said, "How'd you get my phone number?" And I said, "Well, today's day and age, all you have to do is just Google somebody's email address." And I said, "I discovered that you were a real estate broker, and there is your phone number, and I gave you a call." He says, "Oh," but he's in L.A. And but I mean, geez, you know, there was a movie made about these people some years back, and what a remarkable, you know, how they came here and just kind of recreated their society, you know, and most of them in L.A., some of them. There's a large Hmong presence in Memphis because, and this fellow said that he came through Arkansas, which surprised me, but I mean, there's pockets of these people all over the country, and they're very patriotic, and they're very organized, and they're ready. They're tight knit, and these people know how to get things done because they understand extended family like we don't.
Yeah,
because the Marian Marian movement inside Catholicism, the people that believe in the Fatima prophecies, they're kind of looked down on as nuts. You know, kind of like you and I are in some circles, and should be an interesting interview.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot has come out on that. I think we've already seen one component of the Fatima message has already happened.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't realize it, and that is I learned that in 1958, when they had the papal conclave, right after that conclave, Sister Lucia did something she never did before. She attempted to get on the radio and go public. When I first heard that, I thought, well, okay, that's kind of interesting. You know, so what? Well, Spirit came in and said, "Well, no, Mark, you don't understand. Why would she do something like that?" I said, "I don't know." I said, "No, you still don't understand. She has a vow of obedience. She wouldn't break it. She never did before. Why would she do it then?" Well, then I started putting, in that conclave, it was reported the smoke changed, but no one came to the balcony. No new pope. Well, probably what happened is the wrong person came out of that conclave as pope. And Sister Lucia now has no vow of obedience to him. And she can go public. Unfortunately, they were able to stop her. That's when they put the gag order on her, and she can't talk to anybody no more. Of course, I believe there's two major components of the third secret. One is going to be that these guys are going to take over church, can't have pope, call Vatican II, change the whole faith, and turn everything upside down. Basically get rid of all the traditional good moral principles that some of them had, in their faith, and do that. So that's one component. I think the other component has to do with things that relate to the magnetic field reversal. In the oceans overflowing on land, like John Paul II said at Fulda, Germany in, 1981 or 4, somewhere back there. And guess who he was talking to? He was not talking to regular Catholics. He was talking to traditional Catholics.
Right. Yeah, that was in Stimme des Glaubens magazine. You can go to, listeners, you can go to prophecykeepers.com, go Control F and type in Pope and enter. It'll take you right down to the exact quote, but they buttonholed him and said, you know, well, you know, why wasn't, you know, Fatima 3 ever revealed? He says, well, you know, if we were to tell you that giant sheets of ice and oceans would oversweep continents and kill millions in the blink of an eye, that's not something so much we'd want to be publicized.
Right. And guess what? If your magnetic fields reverse, and during the reversal, the crustal displacement on the Earth, on the outer crust, not the core and all that, you don't have to have the whole Earth flip over. All you have to have is the outer crust, relatively thin, shift around. If that
just,
happened, yeah, we could see oceans
still
come up over the land.
Yeah, if the rotation stops, the centripetal force is going to go to the crust will keep moving for a while.
Yeah.
Until it settles
down.
Not
only that, but if it slows down and does this and that, you could also see, I believe, right around the time related to the magnetic fields going to zero, I believe that's also somewhere in that proximity we'll see what they call a 3 days of darkness or 4 days or whatever. It'll be associated with that. And the Mayans talk about that too. And back in, what was it, November and December 2009, I believe, they had a council down there, and they were talking about releasing a book, their own book, of their own side of the story, because, you know, everybody's talking about 2012 and all this. So they were thinking about writing everything down. And while they were talking about this council, they were talking about the fact what happened the last time the 3 days of darkness hit. May not be exactly 3 days, but they said they took tremendous losses of people. Not many made it. They also remembered the time before that. They remember in their memory right now, they have at least two times they remember the time of darkness. And same story, you know, they lost a lot of people. So, but if you think about it, those magnetic fields go, okay? What happens to some people when during a full moon or the changes in the magnetics and the gravity of the moon? There are some people that are kind of borderline in their brain, right? And they're more vulnerable.
Yeah.
And they lose it.
Yeah, Eddie, I mean, we're having a super moon tonight. In the emergency rooms, because is it apogee is the closest or perigee? Anyway, the moon is close to the Earth, and the emergency room people, I mean, they're all geared up, and the cops will tell you they're all nervous on a night like tonight.
So imagine if you have something where the whole field's go nuts and go to zero and stuff.
Oh,
what people are going to do. Now you know why some of the...
That's where your tinfoil hat comes in handy.
Well, it's also, you know, some of the, I don't know exactly because I've heard it kind of secondhand, so I haven't heard some of the one I'm going to say directly from an elder. I've heard it secondhand, so, you know, I'm not 100% sure its authenticity, but it sort of makes sense, and that is that one of their recommendations was very similar to the Catholics. Catholics say during the 3 days of darkness, you find a place, you stay there, you do prayer, meditation, you be calm, maybe have some water, candle and stuff, but you don't go outside, you cover your windows and everything, you basically, you know, go in a cave and hide.
Yeah.
You know,
they've identified safe places. And one of the safe places for them is Salt Lake. I thought that was kind of funny. Another one's around Pipestone, Minnesota, and some of them are really serious about it.
And some of the natives say the same thing. But one of the things I heard was one of the things the natives used to have on some of the tribes is when they started going into modern housing for a while, and it still might be legitimate, I think. Is they were required to have another house that was built out of all natural materials.
Uh-huh.
No synthetic, no alloys, nothing mixed. Now, we have the same stuff showing up in the Bible where it says you know, all these lesser commandments, right? There's, I don't know, 300 or so. But most of those things have to do with not mixing things together.
Right.
And now let's say, what if there's a really scientific valid reason for that? What if the magnetic fields drop, and when those drop and there's no magnetic field and stuff, what happens if there's a relationship between that and matter itself? So that naturally occurring matter and structures of the earth, well, they might be okay. But synthetic compounds, man-made stuff, might not be able to handle the magnetic change. It might, who knows, dissolve, break up, whatever. I don't know what will happen to it. But maybe there's a real good reason for it, and you can base it even in science, that there might be a reason that, you know, if those guys are supposed to have a natural house out of all materials, it might be because that's going to stay intact, and the other stuff might not be able to hold its integrity.
Yep. Yeah, it might just be that simple. You know, there's a reason why Hebrew priests and, you know, they supposed to wear a certain kind of clothes, and I know the high priests, they were never allowed to have their feet touch the ground when they were carried around in sedan chairs, and which would have kept them from being grounded. And maybe it was just and Cherokee priests, they live in stone houses just like the Hebrew priests, so there's a reason. And you see these things in movies every once in a while. So, there's a lot of these ideas that are written into motion pictures, and people think a lot of them are nutty, but they're, a lot of these ideas, they're written by Jewish guys in Hollywood, but the Jewish guys in Hollywood are familiar with the way things used to work anciently. That's the reason why you have Star Wars. What was the word they used for? Oh, Padawan. You know, that's an ancient word. You know, a lot of them were Hebrew words, and like Jedi. That just means faithful.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. And if you pay attention and look into history, what you can figure out.
I think that's true. We're finding out that there's a reason all these people were doing those things and saying those things and passing things down in one way or another, because they went through these experiences, so they saw some of the stuff, like the Mayans saying they saw the oil falling from the sky, read that, and most people would read that and think, when I first read it, I thought, that didn't make much sense. Yeah, right. Until you learn there really is a way that can happen.
Well, let's take an 80-second break. I got to go visit inspect the plumbing, and we'll take an 80-second break and be back in a minute.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Blue Otter, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Oklava Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and/or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
Sorry about that. I lost my browser there for a second. Sorry about that. And but I'm back. And I was going to bring up, you know, Badger a minute ago was talking about just how quickly things could happen. And Badger, are you back yet? Oh, well, let me play. There was a NASA employee that that talked about back when the Hubble telescope was first started up. A few of them had access, and they could look and see what was coming in. And of course, they've been clamped down on that. And Mark, you back yet? Yeah, you want,
yeah.
Can I go ahead and play this this video?
Sure.
Played a couple times. Yeah, it takes about 15 minutes, but it's really kind of interesting. It kind of points out just how quickly things can happen. Here we go.
Back in the 1950s, most people aren't aware of it, but there was a scientific storm in America all through the late 50s about this thing out there in space, because the astronomers were all watching it, and that was back when they weren't afraid to talk about it. It was in the science magazines. I mean, I had a subscription to, like, Popular Science, and hell, it was on the front cover of the magazine one day in, like, 1961. And I was really excited when I saw it, because here's this giant red planet on the horizon of the California coast, and a humongous tidal wave coming in towards the coast, and having grew up in the mountains of the Sierras, and this thing in the magazine, it said this tidal wave coming in was going to be at least 3 miles high, and I went in and showed it to everybody in the house, and they laughed, and they said, look, it says right here, there's nothing to worry about, it won't be here for another 50 years. Hey, guess what? That 50 years has came and gone, and this baby's out there in the sky. They've been watching it. I watched it, and I can tell you, this thing has got so much trash coming around it. You know how we live in a solar system? We've got 9 planets and a big sun. This
right.
thing has got 7 planets and its own sun. But I believe that instead of having dirt on it like our planet does and water, I think this thing is just a big, bright reddish-orange iron ball, because it's giving off all this red iron oxide dust out into the atmosphere. When we thought at first it was just a teeny little red speck of fuzzy red dust in the distance, but over the years as it went by and we watched it, it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then finally, about 08, we could see this thing like it was across the street. And we could see that it was a blazing hot ball of fire giving out sparkles of red iron oxide dust for thousands of miles in every direction. And you could see the planet circulating it. Now, I'll tell you one thing that I really am nervous about. I think this thing's got a planet like ours circling it. This is its own solar system. We're about to have a solar system come through the middle of our solar system. This can't be good. But unfortunately, it looks as though that's what's going to happen. Hopefully nothing in this mess will hit us, even though it does say it will in the Bible, leastwise it does in my Bible. It says we can expect all kinds of problems. We were looking at asteroids. Right close to this thing, there's asteroids that are floating around right near the, that are orbiting the main sun itself. These things appear to be about 500 miles across. And as you go back into the tail, you get into meteorites that go back for millions of miles in the tail. This thing looks like a giant red teardrop-shaped dust cloud. And you can see, once if you're able to see it up close like we did, you can see every speck out there. I guarantee you there's trillions of meteorites following this thing. Now, these CIA people that I know say that we're not going to be that close to it when it goes past us. They're saying that in order to attain breakaway speed, when it comes up around the backside of the sun, its speed will at least double, possibly more, which will put it here earlier than everybody is saying it will, and that this thing will probably be about 20 million miles from us when it crosses in front of us. And then as soon as it flips us upside down, we're going to go into its debris field tail and be pelted with meteorites. And, of course, in the Bible it says they will talon 70 pounds. So if you've got 70-pound meteorites falling like hail, and I can guarantee you they will be falling like hail because there are that many in the tail of this thing. This thing has got a tail loaded with trash. I mean, It's incredible the amount of stuff that's in this thing's tail. And we're going to go right through that tail. And if it doesn't beat everything on the surface of the ground into a flat putty, I don't know what it'll take. I tell everybody, you better be at least 20, 30, 40, 50 feet underground and have either concrete or stone above you, because it'll break through the roof or whatever you've got if you don't. These CIA guys told me that this pole shift will probably happen from start to finish in around 28 minutes. That doesn't give you a lot of warning. When you see that thing out there in the sky, you're going to have to run as fast as you can to your underground facility, because this is going to happen so fast. Now, see, here's another thing nobody's talking about. You've got this giant iron planet that they say is 47,000 miles across, getting ready to come up past us. And when it starts to approach us, it's going to start and have real serious effects.
So is it a planet or a failed star?
It's not a failed star. It you know, I saw this thing up close. It did not look like a failed star. It looked just like our sun.
Right.
Okay. Would you call our sun a failed star?
No. Okay. Well, you had said planet. I wasn't sure if it was like a failed star, brown dwarf, or a full sun. So it's a full sun?
It looks to me like a miniature sun, just like the one we have. The only difference is, see, is our sun is giving off flames and stuff, and this one's doing the same thing as it, but it's giving off this red iron oxide cloud of dust around it, and until it got close, we couldn't even tell what was in there. We could see it was hot, and it looked like it was just a dull red when we were first able to discern it through the red cloud. But as it approached, it started to become more apparent that this thing is just orange hot. I mean, to tell how hot it is, I was told that they estimated between 5 and 10 million degrees. But, you know, I don't really know, if that's right or not. I mean, it's got to be pretty hot, because it's sending all of this red iron oxide dust out into space around it.
Right.
And it's got this enormous, and I mean enormous, at least 50 or 100,000 miles on each side of it, this red dust cloud that goes all the way around it. I know when we were watching it, as it started to make the upward swing to approach behind our sun, it was amazing. The red dust cloud settled down. Instead of being round, it started to settle down into a V, like wings, upside down wings.
Right.
And I thought, boy, I wonder if that's where the ancient Sumerians got the idea this thing had wings, because, you know, centrifugal force is a funny thing. When it comes back up around the planet, when we see it in the sky, my guess is it's going to look like it's got wings, because centrifugal force is going to be pulling the red iron oxide dust and particles out to one side, and then as it starts to climb out and go away from us, listen, I was told that this thing's magnetic field is going to be so strong, anybody that does not have a padded lead helmet to wear will have their brain gutted for everything they ever knew, and they'll be a complete raving moron after this thing passes. They'll lose their, they won't know, they'll pee in their pants. They won't have a clue what's going on, because this thing will gut their brain. And you know, I was reading a deal in my Bible. It says that after this happens, that nobody will care, because they won't be able to remember it. Well, of course, I was told by somebody the reason that is because the electromagnetic field from this thing will be so strong, because, see, as it comes up underneath of us, it's going to start and pull us toward it. And then, just like a pair of big magnets, all of a sudden it's going to lock onto us. And when it does, it's going to be like the Jolly Green Giant hit the earth in the ass. It's going to send a jolt 500 to 1,000 foot high. This is what I'm told, 500 to 1,000 foot high shock waves all the way around planet Earth. They'll be so bad that in a lot of areas that don't have good solid soil, it'll fluff it so badly that you'll practically be like you're standing in quicksand. And that this thing's magnetic field will literally gut your brain of everything. And so you may want to give some thoughts to getting you some sheet lead, build you a little lead helmet to wear, you know, like a little motorcycle helmet to protect your entire brain and the back of your neck, so that way this can't happen. Because, you know, if these guys are right about this, and I'm pretty sure they are, because I know for a fact they know what they're talking about when they say stuff. And so, you know, and it does sound reasonable to me, knowing what I do about electromagnetic energy. that this could happen, and it very easily could gut everybody's brain for everything they ever knew, and they'll stand there and pee in their pants and go, gee, what was that? And that's if they still know how to talk. And there won't be any doubt in anybody's mind, because this thing's going to look like a big red dragon, exactly like all the ancient Sumerians and the Chinese and all the rest of them that had documented this thing's passing before. It didn't look like a white ball or a snow cloud or nothing. It looked like a big red iron oxide dust cloud with a superheated star in the middle of it. And, I mean, you know, and that's what we've seen. So, you know, I don't care what anybody else says. There's a possibility. There's more than one thing out there. You know, I watched it through the Hubble Space Telescope, and when this thing looked like it was across the street, the Hubble got cut off, and they encrypted it, and that was the end of any transmissions we had to watch. And we know that the Hubble, in order to be in the shadow of the Earth, had to be at an angle, and so that meant it was looking downward. And this thing was coming up underneath of us, and I tell you the honest God truth, I personally think this thing is real close to us right now, but, you know, that's just my general feeling that, you know, and I'm a pretty psychic guy, I have the feeling that this thing is right close by and that we're going to see it any time. I mean, I've been doing everything I could do to get prepared for it to, I'm really worried about what Jesus says. You know, when the fig tree is putting on its leaves, know that summer is near, and I'm at your door. And that worries me more than probably anything I've read in the Bible about this whole thing, the parable of the fig tree, because everything seems to be in place for this thing's arrival. And the bad thing is, he says, I'm going to come like a thief in the night. Well, it does also say in the Bible that I'm going to make the sun go down at noontime in Jerusalem. Okay, if that's the case, there's only one thing that will make the sun go down, not hit the horizon, down, go down at noontime, and that's if the planet experiences a pole shift.
Okay, I got a quick question that you can probably answer really quickly and then continue from the chat room. Wants to know if you're talking about Planet X or Elenin, and I've never thought Elenin is Planet X. Terrell's pretty
well,
stuck on that, but
is.
I think Elenin is a result of it. It's a comet that's been kicked in.
Elenin is extinction level event Nibiru is near.
Right.
Does that explain it?
Yeah.
Okay, because listen, they've known about this thing forever, and I mean they've known about it forever. I mean, if I read about it in a science magazine in 1961, that tells you that, I mean, it's only 1,800 years away. How could they not be able to see it when it came around the backside of the last sun and headed this way?
Right, right.
You have to know they've been watching it, because if you know, Carl Sagan was showing stuff that they took with their old telescopes that was billions and billions of miles away, and this thing's only 1,800 years away. Well, and by 1930, it was only 70 years away. You know, we do estimate that this thing, let me give you a thing, maybe you can figure out your own timeline. We estimated that this thing is traveling around 3,500 miles an hour, okay?
Okay.
That was our estimate of its speed. Now, it has been picking up speed, and that's the reason why we think it's going to arrive early, because when it comes around the backside of the sun, it's got to double that speed in order to attain breakaway speed to leave the sun and not wind up orbiting it. It's never orbited the sun in the past that we know of, so that means that it's going to have to attain breakaway speed to head back out into space. Now, you look at the NASA videos, photos, and all this other crap those morons put on the Internet. This thing is coming in. It's going to, as soon as it goes around the top of the sun, it's going to go pew, back out into space.
Right.
And it's going to do this really fast. When it goes past us, it's going to go past us so fast that we'll almost have no time to get ready. That's my opinion. But, you know, just drawing it out on paper a few times and thinking about it, and I went, you know, if this thing picks up enough speed to make breakaway speed, then that means it's going to come past us. You know, this thing, according to what I was told, is that this thing is approximately 47,000 miles in diameter, you know, four or five times the size of the Earth, and it'll come past us, and we won't have a lot of warning, and we won't get to see it in the sky until it's on us. I think the NASA timeline is completely off. I think this thing is going to arrive much earlier than they say it is. You know, I know they're saying October, but, you know, if you look at the, you know, now I was told that the poles are not shifting at 42 miles a year. They're shifting at 42 miles a day. And the reason is because this planet is rolling over to face this thing. Now, when it goes by, it's not going to push our North Pole away. It's going to grab our Southern Pole with its Northern Pole, and it's going to be like somebody kicked this planet in the ass, that earthquake that it talks about in Revelations when the opening of the sixth seal comes. From what I've been told, that's very accurate, because that's exactly what's going to happen. There's going to be a massive earthquake when it locks onto us. As it goes past us, we're going to follow it right upside down. The oceans are just going to be roaring from pole to pole, as you could well guess they would, because if you take a planet that's 7,000 miles across and roll it upside down in 30 minutes, you're going to have some real serious problems with wind and water. We should be preparing to expect this thing to show up.
So, a lot of interesting things he said there. Now, I don't know if, Mark, you remember, but it seems like 7, 8, 9 years back, there was a real consternation in the astronomical world because astronomers from all – and by the way, don't discount this guy just because he mispronounces astronomer. You know, he's not stupid. But there was something going on down at the South Pole because people were being called to Antarctica or Australia and other places apparently to view something. And you can, but you got to imagine, I mean, we sit here, we look up at the night sky, but, you know, we can't see the Southern Cross here. We only see pretty much half the sky. You have to be in the Southern Hemisphere to even see this thing coming. And if it's coming,
and Harrington
from,
said it would come from the south.
Right, and if it's coming from underneath our feet, you know, we won't see this thing. It would literally come like a thief in the night. And now this also explains why we've got underground facilities going in, and I think 47 states. You know, Jesse Ventura's, you know, talked about. I mean, there's one little town in Arkansas that I think has only got about, you know, 20,000 people, but there's like 15 banks there. And, you know, there's a lot of karst topography, cave country, you know, in northern in the Ozarks. And so, I mean, these rich people are digging in. They're spending billions and billions of dollars to make sure that the government, you know, continues. They don't seem, I mean, we're, what are we, $17 trillion in debt? They don't seem to be real concerned about doing much about it. Maybe it's because they think, you know, all or most of us are going to be dead pretty soon, and they're not going to have to worry about it. I mean, it explains the behavior, because, I mean, these guys in the Beltway, I mean, they've all got a ticket to ride.
Well, Blue Otter, the thing is, though, is that whether or not, you know, there's a Planet X or Herkovilus or whatever people want to call it, or I think in the Bible they think it's like Wormwood or Abaddon or something like that, you know, that may or may not be a come into play. But we are seeing some signs right now, irregardless of if that particular is the cause or part of the cause or not. You know, we are seeing things with our magnetic field. We're seeing that swarm satellite. We're seeing our people are reporting the ultraviolet radiation hitting the ground. We're seeing some. We're starting to see some pretty big changes in our weather patterns. So we're seeing things, regardless of, you know, exactly what exactly is the cause. We're seeing it, and it could be that this there could be an object coming in, and there's lots of things that seem to be in the record that seem to suggest that something like that can happen. Whether it happens on what cyclic basis or the nature of it, I'm not certain, you know, but the fact is, we're seeing some pretty, I think, important signs right now. And if those things continue, if we continue to see really erratic weather and this and that, we don't know exactly the timing. I suspect what happens is it'll probably build and build and build, and then there'll be something that happens where it just really moves, escalates, and just goes, you know, exponential on the curve. And what that triggering mechanism is, I'm not sure, but I think that generally probably will happen, and that's probably around the time when the field goes to zero and the whole Earth's magnetic things are just all over the place. You know, it's just, you know, 10, 20, 30, 50 magnetic poles. It just scrambled. And so now if we have if there's another body coming in a solar system, you know, small solar system, you know, it's believable. I mean, we know that there's things that something seems to have come through in the past. You know, Velikovsky in his book Worlds in Collision theorized that, Venus popped out of Jupiter or something and came around and moved around, tore the atmosphere off Mars. Mars and Venus gets in a fight, and that's where we have some of these stories that involve Mars or Venus and interacting with the Earth. And then suppose somehow it was swinging around in the solar system for maybe, you know, how many years, and it came back through again, you know, like 50, 52 years later, which we get the Jubilee or the Mayan 52-year cycle possibly after that. So, you know, well, it might be possible that, you know, maybe Velikovsky had some of the idea right. Maybe he didn't get it all right, but what if something else moved through the solar system, you know, and... You know, if you're back then, you didn't have real fancy telescopes or you're just watching things by eyes, you know, if certain movements, you know, could get kind of confusing. So it's possible that, you know, something like a little solar system type thing or brown dwarf or something moves through. I mean, there seems to be some stories in various cultures that seem to support or point in that direction as a possibility. But even if that wasn't to happen, what happens if it's just simply the Earth and the magnetic fields and the Earth-Sun interaction and some kind of timing, and that doesn't even require something coming in at us? That it could be doing it all by ourself, and that, so, you know, we don't necessarily have to have an external object to have a problem, you know. But back what we were talking about earlier is, well, you know, okay, if we know about all this stuff, well, what do? You know, if, like he's saying, you dig underground, you get lead and all this other stuff and shield and all this, and, well, you know, a lot of people probably aren't going to be able to do that. Is there something else that people ought to consider doing, like maybe going back and saying, maybe we should all get together and follow the laws of the Creator, start singing some praises real quick and just say thank you and all that and try to change our ways? Because most of the native cultures, even the Catholics and Christians and stuff, a lot of them seem to believe or acknowledge there's a connection between human behavior, what we do, and if we're behaving ourselves and acting right, and storms and bad stuff happening to us. And the Hopi said that. They said, you know, well, you know, if you're not doing the right thing, well, you don't get rain. You know, your crops die. Or you get storms. Or you get volcanoes. You get problems. And, you know, the interesting thing is some of our science and quantum science is pretty close to basically saying the same thing, that our thoughts and our actions can move outward and reflect back and come to bite us and cause an unbalance in our environment and the Earth. Well, that was one of the names of one of the movies, I think, they made about the Hopi a long time ago. It was just a movie, and it didn't have any real story. It was just playing the thing. It was basic. I think the title of the movie was something, Quanzaquoti or something like that, but it meant out of balance, life out of balance. So, you know, it's maybe if we got our act together and everybody started behaving themselves, that might mitigate it. And what did the Hopi say? When we're not behaving, the creator tells the two guys at the poles, the magnetic fields, to let go. And then all our climate and everything goes out of whack, and that's to get our attention so we, you know, think about what we're doing. And if we don't listen, then the creator just says, well, don't grab back hold, just keep letting go, and then all hell breaks loose, you know, and the magnetic field goes to zero, and we have the oceans and all that stuff, and the face of the Earth getting recreated, right, which would happen if all the volcanoes, earthquakes, and oceans are moving all over the place and all this stuff is happening. Yeah, it would. We'd see a pretty different face of the Earth. So, but what causes this problem, you know, if you listen to Hopi and some of these Native people, and even to some extent Christians and others, you know, around the world, what do they say? They say this is caused by us just not doing the right thing, you know, not living the laws of the Creator and stuff. Almost every culture is saying the same thing. And that's their Hopi's instructions at the beginning. Follow the laws of the Creator. Sing praise of the Creator. That's all you have to do. If you do that, you're going to be okay. What's everybody do? They don't do that. They start following the laws of commercialism, get all caught up in the money and materialism and all this other garbage, start shooting, killing each other, stabbing each other to the back for, you know, whatever. And pretty soon, it's a total disaster and a mess. What did the Hopi say in the third world? They had guys that apparently had what they call flying shields. They could fly into a city, waste the city, and get out before anybody even knew they were there. Well, you know what? I think the Tibetans, in a cave up in Tibet, I think they have one of those Hopi flying shields or saucers. I believe they have one, and it's possible that the Germans in World War II, pre-World War II, were in Tibet looking for stuff, and they may have actually seen that saucer. Lo and behold, what do we see? We see Germans seem to have, out of nowhere, started building saucers.
The bell, and the bell-shaped one. Have you seen the YouTube video of it's a Marine convoy moving up a valley, and one of these triangular ships, so like TR-3B, you know, moving in over this Taliban stronghold and just blowing the living crap out of it.
Yeah.
And that's interesting because I know Robert Shrewsbury told me that there's an ancient legend I mean, you can imagine, and I don't want to. I'm getting tangential here, but I seem to remember when I talked with Thomas O. Mills, he said, you know, it's very possible that we had a pretty high order civilization, and because we have not succeeded in literally balancing the planet, that, you know, every few thousand years, you know, we get up to. I mean, we might progress all the way up to where we are right now, explaining why they found leather boots, you know, 10,000 feet under the earth, and mines, and metal tubes perfectly formed, you know, found in the chalks of the coast of France, all kinds of anomalies. You know, it's entirely possible that this earth has seen great civilizations rise only to experience this because we weren't able to somehow balance it. Well, and that's the point that Thomas O. Mills made, is that the Giza Plateau is a story that we're going to have 8 chances to do this, or, you know.
As what the Hopi say, you get 9, well, this first world, so that may not, there's the first world, the second world, and there are 7 more in the Hopi story. So the Hopi basically say, as far as I understand, you know, if you get to the 9th one and you still haven't learned, well, you may not get any more chances.
Yeah, really.
You know,
exactly.
The Hopi said, though, that the last world cycle and the third world, they were pretty advanced.
Mm-hmm.
They, in many ways, in some of their technology, they were ahead of us. And the interesting thing is they went nuts and they just started attacking. They were having wars. They were doing all kinds of crazy stuff. I don't know if they're as bad as we are now, but they were pretty bad. And it got so bad, they say that the creator called his second-hand man and said, we're going to cut their thread of time short. They don't get their full cycle. Because,
well,
and second command said, well, you know, what's the deal? Why? And creator says, because I'm going to stop it now, because if I don't stop it now, there might not be any good people left.
Yeah. Well, Shrewsbury told me, he said there's an ancient story that long ago there was an invasion of beings from outer space, and they try, you know, I mean, watch Falling Skies tonight, you know, beings came from outer space, tried to take us over, and then another race came in, intervened, and gave us technology to be able to fight beat this race back, and they left the technology that they left, we started using it against each other. So the elders decided that the technology was going to be buried. And, you know, but you watch that on TV tonight on Falling Skies. I think it's going to be on here about a half an hour.
Yeah.
And there isn't anything in science fiction that doesn't eventually come true.
Well, I think some of those people possibly doing science fiction, doing these stories and stuff, they get a spiritual insight, artistic spiritual
right.
insight, and have their own connection to knowledge and truth that they pull in. Maybe, you know, maybe they don't get everything 100% right,
right,
but they get the idea. The idea is there.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't blame people. If, you know, if they don't get the story, or, you know, exactly 100% right every way, you know, if they got the main idea and they're trying to do a good job of that, you know, I give them credit for that, and I don't get caught
sure.
up if they get something a little bit off here or there. So what?
Sure.
You know, you don't always hear everything right.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the elders, when you ask a Hopi elder, well, you know, what should we do? They say, well, just, you know, if you get up in the mountains and forest, you're going to be okay, and just you need to be at a little higher elevation, and because there will be flooding, and the survival instructions are simple. You know, live a good life, and sing praises to Creator, and hope for the best, and, you know, wouldn't hurt to have some food around or learn how to, this month. You know, slowly over the years, you know, we made some preparations, but this month I'm going to go by the fireplace store, and I'm going to put in about 20 fireplace bricks so I can make, so when the time comes and we don't have electricity, I'll be able to make a rocket stove. These fire bricks, you know, they last a lot longer than regular bricks, but a rocket stove it's a kind of a small version of what the Spaniards used to use to smelt gold, but they get a very high temperature, you know, with not a whole lot of fuel, and it's a good quick way to cook.
Well, you know, one of the Hopi elders told me, he said, start saving your seeds.
Yeah.
And when he told, you know, he didn't go through and give all the details, and, you know, he just gives you the basic instruction. And later on, I was sitting there contemplating, you know, what he had said. And I realized the wisdom of it, because I thought, well, you have seeds, you can plant them, grow plants and get more seeds. You can use the seeds, they're relatively light, so you can carry a lot of them pretty easily, and you can trade and use them as money. But also, if you have enough of certain kinds of seeds, if you were underground and you had some water, it could sprout those seeds and live
yep.
off of those sprouts. They're pretty healthy.
That's right. That's one of the things
so
I've got stored.
They're pretty. Seeds are very flexible.
Well, you know, a handful of hemp seeds, you know, you can get irradiated hemp seeds in from, this is non-psychoactive stuff, like, you know, and they're, by the way, the first crop, legal crop, is now growing very well in Kentucky. And, but a handful of hemp seeds will sustain a human being all day long, and it's got everything you need. And
they're very, very digestible protein. Have mm-hmm. a lot of omegas in them and stuff. Yeah, it's real good. So, you know, yeah, that would be a good thing to have.
Yeah, birds. You know, hey, if you want a hemp seed, you know, just buy bags of bird seed, because most of what's
yeah.
in there is hemp seed. It's those.
Yeah.
It's those little brown, greenish-brown seeds that have little white speckles. That's a hemp
yeah.
seed. And
We eat it. We have the ground up stuff and we eat it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the good advice. You know, have the seeds and know where you're at. That it if some of these events unfold, you know, what do you do? You know. But again, what gets us into this mess? Apparently, you know, after we get whacked by Creator, we shape up for a while, and then, you know, we're hundreds or thousands of years or so, we go back to doing the same old garbage we're doing right now. And then we do it all over again. And so the critical part, I think, is, you know, well, let's quit playing a broken record and do something different. And what's different is how do we manage to keep our civilization on track and instead of falling off and just doing whatever it wants, and how can we do that? Because if we don't do that, then we just do it over and over. We go to the fourth world, we're now, then we are in the fifth world, then we go to the sixth world, then we go to the seventh world, then we go to the eighth, and we're in the ninth, and that's our last world, and we still haven't learned anything. What's our chances?
I think Bruce Beach it's got the right idea in a universal language, because, you know, we were one of my teachers at BYU was an interesting guy. You know, he liked to talk about anything but the subject, and we'd spend about 40 minutes talking about all kinds of wild stuff. And then in the last 10 minutes, you know, we'd quickly cover the subject matter, you know, but one of the things he pointed out was he said, why would people in modern-day Iraq spend all that time and energy building a tower to heaven if they couldn't actually see it? And he said he believed that Enoch's people were lifted off and were in low orbit, probably very low orbit, just low enough that they were out of the reach of, you know, people that could maraud them. And, you know, we've seen this in science fiction movies. I think Dune had it portrayed. But it kind of made sense to me. And he said that
basically they're trying to build a space elevator.
Yeah. And
there's people been talking about doing that here right now on Earth, you know, building a space elevator.
and the Creator knew that we were going to succeed. I mean, we were totally united in this effort when we all spoke one language, and then came the confusion of tongues. And ever since then, you know, we've been split up into, you know, so many different bloodlines and tribes and the different stories and people fighting over birthright and I know Rabbi Shalomim Halahoi posted on his I've had him on a couple times, but he posted 2-3 days ago that he had a dream that this incursion into Gaza was going to turn real ugly, and he was really afraid that public sentiment was going to go against Israel, I mean, real bad. And he was really, really concerned. And
looks like that could be very well happening right now.
Yeah, well, you know, with the news reports, you know, we're all talking about, oh, you know, look at the children and how, you know, they're being killed and maimed by the Israeli. Well, you know, what the average guy on the street in America doesn't know is those kids, from the time they are born, I mean, they're raised to think that the highest spiritual thing they can do is, when they grow up, you know, strap on a bomb and go explode it and kill Jews, you know. And that's literally sacrificing your children to the god Molech. I mean, anciently they had a huge hollow statue, and they would heat this thing up until it was red hot, and they would literally take their infant children and put it on this red hot idol and burn it to a crisp. I mean, that's the same thing. You're sacrificing God to the fire.
Think about the world right now. How many parents are not necessarily doing exactly the same thing, but in a certain way in their life and their actions and teachings and stuff, they're basically tossing their children down the drain.
Yeah.
As far as having any kind of future. I would say a lot of people in the world, now, maybe they're not 100% voluntarily doing that, but by their ignorance and actions, they're doing
South Central L.A. South Central L.A.
So I think that that's just a sign of how decrepit a civilization has become.
Mm-hmm. And then you really begin to wonder, you know, well, are we worthy? You know, maybe it'd be a good idea if we have a house cleaning so we can start over again. And
well, the problem with it is we've had that a couple of times. And
mm-hmm.
the question is, like I said, is, you know, we don't, we haven't seemed to learn our lesson so far. So the real question is, how can we change it? You know, what can we do? And I think that we have some of the answers in the Native people, what Hopi said they were told, and follow the law's creator and sing praises and that. But there's another component that we see in some of them too. And this goes back to the teachings of the Lord of the Wind and the Water.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that we're one. We are all connected. The Lakota, Omotakiyesen, or however you say it, Mayan,
mm-hmm.
Himlakesh, different cultures all over the planet actually seem to all have words for this. And quantum science is telling us the same thing, that we are connected. We're not separate like we think. And I think there's an answer there, too, because I think if we realize that, and we start acting that way and also using it, because I believe we can use it when we use it the right way to help each other, then I think it really does a lot of good. And I think that's part of the answer too, because we realize that, you know, yeah, whatever you do to someone else, you're doing it to yourself. And we
mm-hmm.
realize that each person, from quantum science we know this, a hologram, you know, you take a hologram and a hologram is made with a laser, and you have the laser and you have some mirrors and stuff, and you create an interference pattern, but the key is the laser is coherent light. Unified light is what coherent means. Unified light, creator, unified light. Well, the hologram, one of the interesting things about a hologram is if you take it and you break it into pieces, each piece will have the whole picture. You can take that piece and break it again, and it will still, each of those pieces will still have the whole picture. You can keep doing this. Yeah, the picture gets kind of blurry after a while, but the point is the whole picture is within each piece, each smallest piece that's possible to make. Well, that tells us maybe another thing. Everything, we could take a part of you, Blue Otter, or me, or anybody, and we could literally have the entire creation encoded in within each of us, the smallest piece of each of us. So all of us are in each other. In Lakesh, I'm Omotakiyesen. We're all connected.
Hey.
We're all related. We're all part of each other. Now, what happens if we really actually believe that and start acting that way? I think we would be singing praises to the Creator, because, you know, next thing we'd realize is without Creator, if he stops thinking about us for a second and that light coming from his awareness and consciousness stops, we are gone. We only exist in that interaction between Creator's thoughts and light, energy. That's where we live. That's what we are. If Creator stopped for even a millisecond, we would be gone. We are that dependent upon Creator, everything in creation. We really actually realized that. I think we'd maybe act a little bit differently. We spend an awful lot of time saying, thank you, Creator. Keep thinking about us so we're not gone. Right?
Yeah. And, you know, and
I don't think we...
Most, you know, most Christians, Jews will... It's right in the Old Testament. It says we're supposed to bless Creator. You know, and most Christians I know, they're constantly saying, you know, bless me, bless me, bless me, and they never bless Creator. And, you know, we need to get it right. We need to praise, we need to bless the Creator, and because, I mean, the Creator's got emotions, and he's jealous, and may not look like us, may not have a body like us, but he's like us, and we're like him, and he's got passions, and he loves, and but we just need to get it together, and
we need to realize who's smarter here, not us. Obviously,
yeah.
We're not the smart ones because we keep screwing up.
No kidding.
So we need to just get some wits about us and just admit, you know, hey, Creator's actually smarter than us. We're 100% dependent upon Creator. maybe we should listen to the message.
Yeah, I know.
Because the message has been consistent and the same. Look what the people have near-death experience, and they come back. What do they tell us? You know, they tell us, you have basically two things you need to be doing. First thing, love one another. You know, take care of each other and that. Second thing, you get acquire some knowledge and wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how do you acquire knowledge and wisdom? It's obvious, you know, for on all those things, where are you going to go? Where's the smartest place to learn? Creator.
Yeah.
It's like Red Elk says it, right? He says, well, listen to Papa. Go have a chat with Papa and learn something.
and we have to admit that, I know the one of the first pipe ceremonies I watched, a friend of mine named David Brown lives down near Chattanooga, is a Chickamauga Cherokee. Chickamauga Cherokee, you know, they are the remnant of the Neolithic Indians. I mean, they were still Neolithic flint-napping Indians when... the bunch that adopted white technology and became planter class. I mean, these are the ones that went to Mexico, and they were still warring. But, I mean, their pipe ceremony begins with, you know, Creator, we're in trouble. We are in trouble. And we need your help.
That's probably true most days.
Yeah, you know, and so that's the way I pray every night. Hey, you know, I'm in trouble. We need some help here, and, you know, what do we do? How do we help other people? But we got to be peacemakers. And I know it was really interesting. You know, years ago I was looking in the Book of Mormon. You know, I've talked about this from time to time about this choice seer that, you know, would need a spokesman. Well, I recently came to the conclusion that maybe Joseph Smith shouldn't have been out looking for him. Because he'd already come and gone, because Daganoweda, the peacemaker, he couldn't speak. He talked funny because he had a double row of teeth, and he had to have a spokesman, and that's who Hiawatha was. And you know, there's a lot of people coming to realize that the great law, which the United States Constitution quite a bit of is based on. You know, they left the so-called petticoat. They laughed at the petticoat government. They should have left it in, but we forced that type of constitution on all the countries that we had conquered, and it didn't take long for them to eclipse us. And I know a lot of my conservative friends are going to howl when I say, we forced a second Bill of Rights on Japan, Germany, and these other countries. And, you know, we didn't adopt it back then. Maybe we should have, because we had the biggest economic boom in history of the planet. And it's too late to do that kind of thing in this country because, I mean, we just exhausted that boom. And, you know, Japan and these other countries they caught the wave. They rode the wave. There's some things to think about. Well, look, I need to leave a little bit early tonight. I appreciate you, and I guess we'll talk again next Saturday night.
Okay.
All right. Take it easy. Thanks,
all
folks.
Right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Okay. Good night now.
Join us to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Blue Water, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
Grandfather, teach me the ways of the old, so that I may remember